a high fly to right.
On high drive.
This is tagged, going back, back, back. High fly.
Hammers at the gap in left center.
At the track, at the track, at the track. High and deep
that
to
was
right.
Hit a ton.
At the wall.
This is going to go to the rock pile.
Point back at the track.
This ball's getting small. Getting small.
This is charged.
That ball just got out of here.
It could go back to back.
High and deep.
This is going to go for a home run. Way out of here.
This is White Sox Weekly. The White Sox have been busy this offseason.
Let's get this thing going.
They signed a couple of top free agents and spent some bucks in the process.
Boy, this ball is hammered. Oh, my. Mazzara with a two-run homer.
They've closed up some holes.
Inside corner, that is a dirty dozen for Dallas Keuchel.
Gosselin, line shot caught by Gio Gonzalez.
They've unleashed La Pantera.
High and deep to left. Back goes Kiblihan. Still going back. Looking up, and it is gone. A grand slam for Luis Robert.
And they've added some serious pop.
Back in a deep right field. A no-doubter for Yasmani Grandal.
Deep left field. It is gone. Parrot will get a ride. Edwin Encarnacion.
The proverbial window has begun to open.
The Chicago Baseball Conversation.
Point back at the track.
On the flagship home of the Sox.
It is gone.
720 WGN.
510 Sox Fest weekend. White Sox Weekly every Saturday. For the most part, Mark Harmon here. Andy Mazur here. Hi, Andy. Good to see you.
Hi, Mark. It's good to see you as well.
Curtis Koch is producing the program. The phone number is 312-981-7200. We've got Rick Hahn. We've got, who do we have? We've got Michael Kopech. We've got Nick Madrigal. We have a plethora of entertainment. We have Tim Anderson. I honestly feel like I need to take a deep breath. I just came running over from
you
a
did.
Corner place. You
I was there earlier.
You, Andy Mazur, you got to sit down with Jeremy Haber, who's
the assistant GM, right?
Yeah, and director of player development, Chris Getz. And before that, you were going with the big timers. You had Ozzy, you had Frank, you had Mike Soroka.
It was an interesting panel, I'll tell you that. Talking 20 years after the fact with the 2000 team. And it was interesting that they had Ozzy up there because he was in Tampa when all that was going on. And I, you know, kind of asked him, I said, weren't you in Tampa when the 2000 team was winning? He goes, yeah, I was in Tampa. I wasn't playing very much, but I was there.
He was like Ozzy's always
there. He's all knowing.
He yesterday, the opening ceremonies and the media was allowed in the afternoon, and guys are milling around. And so there's Ozzy having Ozzy conversations, always the personality, one of my favorite athletes slash coaches to ever play in this town. And him and Kenny were hanging out for a long time yesterday. So that was kind of interesting, right? I mean, you know, that, I always kind of wonder, like, where's that relationship at right now? But they were buddy-buddy all day yesterday. It was kind of fun to watch.
You know, it was interesting, too. Kenny was there for Jason Benetti's talk with the Ricks, Ricky Renteria and Rick Hahn. And he wasn't sitting near the stage. He was actually sitting in the sound booth at the very far end of the stage. And it was like, what are you doing there?
Hanging
You're
out
to be right over here, aren't you?
Hanging out. I did 3 o'clock. They had Through the Scout's Eyes with the White Sox amateur scouting director Mike Shirley, who's had a very interesting journey.
Yes,
he's been with the Sox organization for a long time. Also, you know, 45th round draft at the Cleveland Indians, and just a guy that's got his head down and doing everything he possibly can to help the ball club, as they say. And then just got to sit with Aaron Bummer and Steve Cishek. And Kurt Hassler is the bullpen coach, and Kurt Hass has been with the organization for 29 years. And, of course, Steve's the new guy here.
Yep.
And I got to tell you, as likable as they come, a great competitor. Yep. He's had a phenomenal career. He's had 25-plus saves three separate times in his career. He was great for the Cubs the last 2 years.
150 appearances in 2 years.
Incredibly durable. And I really think he's going to be just a nice veteran in that pen.
It's interesting with him because he is the one acquisition that is being least talked about.
It's true. He really isn't getting a whole lot of love.
He's not getting the accolades that a Yasmani Grandal is, of course. Edwin Encarnacion, a Dallas Keuchel, even a Gio Gonzalez.
Long list here.
They're getting a little bit more. Omar Mazzara, they're getting a little more of the headlines, which I think probably, and I didn't talk to him, but you did, probably suits him just fine.
Yeah, he's easy going. Very, that's what I mean. Just, you know, a lot of fans were asking questions, which was great and cool to get the participation going. And he, you know, every question, he was giving great details and was excited to answer. And then the brilliant questions that I threw out there, he answered those too. So there's something that's going on with this team.
Yeah, there's something in the air,
right? I mean, Tim Anderson leading the way, and well, Timmy, you know, I caught up with him for a couple minutes yesterday. I asked him, and I'll answer it like, "Yeah, you gonna win another batting title this year?" He's like, "Why not? Why not?" But he's thinking about, you know, putting a big fat ring on that finger.
Yeah, I mean, the batting championship is nice. They surprised him with the Rod Carew Trophy yesterday.
Oh, wow.
On stage, okay. Yeah, and that kind of drew some welcomed applause, which, of course, are well-deserved. And, you know, if anybody knows Tim, he is not about Tim. He's about the other 24 on that team. And certainly would like to be the one that helps to lead them to the promised land.
Yeah, well, we'll have Tim coming up here, and the guy who is actually leading them to the promised land, and so to speak, at least, is the general manager Rick Hahn, who you and I sat down with yesterday. So we're gonna play that interview coming on back here. Do you have anything you need to read for the faithful?
I can read this if you want me to read this.
Why don't you read
that? Hey, Sox fans! Single game tickets are on sale right now. Be here for it all. Watch us change the game in 2020. Get your tickets at whitesox.com.
All right. Rick Hahn, White Sox general manager, right around the corner. It's White Sox Weekly. We're with you till 7 o'clock tonight, 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly.
We were actually able to sit down face-to-face with Yasmani. Everything we learned from that meeting reinforced what we had learned about him from afar and through various sources. That is that not only is he an outstanding contributor based upon what you guys have all seen between the lines, but that he's a tireless worker, a great preparer, a great game planner, and someone who's going to fit in very well in our clubhouse.
Now, back to White Sox Weekly.
720 WGN, Mark Carmen, Andy Mazur, and yes, we have the general manager of your Chicago White Sox, Rick Hahn. Rick, I, you know, from Andy, myself, and all of WGN, White Sox fans everywhere, we do want to congratulate you on a great offseason. And I know you haven't played a game and all that, but it's been a lot of fun to watch and just see you guys hit on so many.
Now, we appreciate that. Look, it's funny because it's Sox Fest weekend. There's a lot of enthusiasm. We love the enthusiasm. It's great to hear, you know, from White Sox fans, from the media like yourself, you know, this level of, hey, this team has done something and turned a corner and they're taking that next step. You know, Jerry Reinsdorf, Kenny Williams, and myself, we sort of take a different view in that we accomplish a lot of what we accomplished this winter. That's good. We're supposed to. Like, that's part of the gig. But until that team starts winning on the field and we're truly in a position to contend for championships, it feels sort of like, I don't know, like premature or false. But so I appreciate it, but that look on my face you saw when you're congratulating me where I'm a little cringing, that's where that comes from.
That was definitely a radio cringe. It was Grandal the first, like, hey, let's get this and then we can move from there, or did that just sort of happen organically?
There were a handful of guys that we reached out on as soon as it was viable, right after the day after the World Series. And Yaz was certainly a major priority. Certainly probably a safe to say our number one position player priority. You can't, you know, as we certainly saw last offseason, and as you saw with the movement in different market segments this year, you know, the starting pitching market moving a little differently than the outfield market, for example, you can't necessarily predict exactly the timing that these things are going to happen. We were fortunate in that we were able to sit down with Yaz face-to-face out in Phoenix at the GM meetings. Soon thereafter, he was truly sincerely interested in us. He started asking for help getting videotape on some of our starters before we even had real substantive conversations about the economics. And then once we got more substantive on the economics, it was clear that if we got to a certain level that he was going to come join us. So that one worked out great. I wish they all, as much as we all love going to the winter meetings, I would love to have all our work done in November, but that was a rare one.
You had to probably love that he was wanted more information. That made you even want him more, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. Look, Yaz to this day still texts me once or twice a week with the name of some minor league free agent or this guy, hey, what do we have on him? I talked to this guy, he's going to be better next year. And I knew him by reputation, obviously, had not had any real one-on-one interactions with him. But certainly coming out of that meeting, much less when he started breaking down some of our guys, much less when he started proactively telling me, hey, I talked to this player about this, and this is going to be better, and how about this guy? It's hard not to get excited for what he brings, not only for the performance that we've all seen in between the lines, but the type of teammate he is and what he's going to bring to that clubhouse.
Yeah, you know, you talk about good problems to have, and I think that's probably one of them when you can bring in an all-star to team with an all-star behind the plate. But you went out and did that in a number of different areas to give yourself some depth and create those good problems to have.
It is part of, you know, when we look back at the motivation behind when we started this rebuild, part of it was we had a pretty good, like, 1 through 8 or 1 through 9 on our roster in terms of talent. You know, we had some really good players, and Chris Sale and Eaton, Abreu was on some of those teams, and Quintana. But the problem was we lacked, like, players 9 through 35 weren't of the caliber that was necessarily capable of winning a championship. And, you know, even in the early stages of this rebuild, we've seen that the baseball gods can be cruel, and some guys get hurt, and some guys don't necessarily fulfill their potential. So you need to have that insulation. You need to have that quality depth. And that was one of the things, one of the goals of what we set out to do, was put ourselves in that position. In all candor, like, and again, I'm got some sort of sickness from being in the GM seat. Like, I still see areas that we aren't to the level we need to be at in terms of depth. But you're absolutely right that certainly at catcher and at other places around the diamond, we've done a decent job, knock on wood, against insulating ourselves against underperformance or injury.
Well, along those lines, like, how comfortable do you feel going in here with the pitching, and is Lucas going to be what he was last year and better? Is Dylan going to take a huge step? Is Michael going to be I think all fans are looking at, these are the question marks.
Those are absolutely questions. Look, they I don't think, first of all, if you ask any of the 30 GMs how do you feel good enough about your pitching, the only ones lying to you will be the ones who say yes. Like, none of us feel good about the pitching. It's too fragile as a beast. That said, you know, we feel really good, obviously, about what Lucas accomplished last year. Do we expect him every year to be a top 5 Cy Young type performer? That'd be wonderful. I think it's hard for any pitcher to say this is who he's going to be every year. But we certainly think a lot of what he did is sustainable. In terms of Lopi, in terms of Cease, you know, we think they both learned very important lessons last year. They both took a great deal of knowledge, some which they wanted, some which they probably didn't, away from some of the performances last year, and put themselves in a good position for 2020 and beyond. Kopech coming back healthy, Rodon coming back healthy at some point, much less the guys we brought in from the outside. That you start seeing it come together to the point where you then have that insulation from a pitching standpoint. Again, I don't think anyone's ever going to feel comfortable that they have enough. A year from right now, I think, knock on wood, everyone stays healthy, and Kopech's back, and Rodon's back, and Dane Dunning, Jimmy Lambert, Jonathan Stever, guys in the minors sort of return or take a step forward. Then you can start looking and be like, okay, they've got like 8 or 9 options for a 5-man rotation, and that's at least a good place where the GM maybe can fall asleep at night.
You were talking at the end of last year, too, about the different areas and aspects that you wanted to improve upon, and one of them was adding a couple of starting pitchers, and you added a couple of starting pitchers that are not just guys to plug in, but they're quality guys that can also give you something in the clubhouse as well as they can give you on the field. That was part of the motivation, right?
Absolutely. Look, the guys wind up on our target list, you know, first or foremost because of their performance and what they're capable of doing in an actual game. That said, when you start sort of separating some guys from each other, you start really diving into what the benefits are of player X versus player Y. The guy who is a good teammate, the guy who has that work ethic, the guy who has been to the top of the mountain, whether it's as a world champion or as an individual achievement, like in Keuchel's case, also as a Cy Young winner, those, you know, tend to separate themselves a little bit from the rest. You know, we love what Keuchel, what Grandal, what Encarnacion bring to the team in terms of their specific performance from 7 to 10 o'clock. It's not really an accident that Keuchel's been in the postseason each of the last 5 years, Grandal's been in the postseason each of the last, or 4 of the last 5 or something like that, and Encarnacion, I think, each of the last 5 years. Like, that's part of you know, helping this young core develop into a championship caliber core, part of it is what these guys can help shepherd them to, and their experiences help with that.
I thought it was interesting that Grendel said that, or rather Keuchel said that when they signed Yasmani, then I became interested. And you're shaking your head, but did you know that was, you know, potentially, were you connecting those dots?
You know, I think certainly any pitcher is going to be excited that Yasmani Grandal is on that staff, and it makes him more appealing. And we literally heard from two guys who picked up the phone and called and said, I'm interested because Yaz is here. And I think Yaz heard from some more himself. Keuchel wasn't one of those who proactively did that. I don't know if Scott Boras would have let him make that phone call. But I think that from the outside world looking in, if you go back to the end of the start of the offseason, certainly high-caliber free agency. Hey, they've got this young core coming together. They've got more prospects on the way. They play in Chicago. You know, they've got Ricky, who everyone hears good things about. You know, that's got some appeal. That checks a lot of boxes for me. I think once we added Grandal, perhaps that resonated with some other free agents, perhaps in Dallas being an example, that, okay, and they're going to start spending some money now and really try to move this needle forward, so to speak. So, again, Yaz made the commitment, even though in the meeting we explained to him, look, you're not going to be the only one. We've got other plans here. And once he cleared that he was going to be with us, we started talking to him about some of the alternatives that were available in free agency and trade to get his thoughts. He made the commitment without necessarily knowing who those guys were. So I don't think it's across the board that, you know, you had to get one and then everyone else fell in place. Some guys were willing to commit before that was even in place, like Yaz.
You know, it's interesting we talk about the guys that you added from outside. And, yeah, they got a lot of the headlines, but there's also a guy that you added from inside that's going to play out in center field most likely. And, you know, this is the second straight year that a highly rated prospect is going to start the year with the big league club. That's got to make you feel good about the way things are headed, too, as far as the rehab is concerned, not having to go outside for everything and being able to look inside as well.
It is. You know, we when you set off down this path, like, your scouts get excited, your player development people get excited, obviously us in the front office get excited when you start accumulating these potentially high impact prospects. And you start looking around the diamond and you're like, okay, well, this guy could move into being third base long term, and this guy could be center field long term, and we got these group, some of which are going to be long term starters. But you know, just because of the way the game is, like, you're not going to build a full championship roster only on homegrown guys. When you start off down this rebuild path, like, that's kind of the aspiration, because you're like, that'd be awesome, and you're trying to acquire as much as possible. But we knew we weren't going to be self-sustaining. We were going to have to go outside either via free agency or via trade. However, the more guys that we can add like that from inside, the Luis Roberts of the world, or soon at some point Nick Madrigal, or perhaps, you know, a year from now we're sitting here talking similarly about Andrew Vaughn, like, that does make it easier. That does make some of the effort to take that next step a little easier, simply because, and we've seen it this offseason, certainly saw it last offseason, like, you can't, just because you're interested in a guy, or just because you're bidding X, doesn't mean you get him. These players have earned the right in free agency. They're the best of the best to get that level of big league service. They get to make a choice based on whatever they want. And even if the White Sox got a chance to win championships in Chicago, which in my biased opinion, obviously, you can't find a better situation than that, they may have a different thing pulling at them that takes them another way. So not needing to be subject to the vagaries of free agency, not needing to give up your own talent to trade for via trade for veteran talent, that's a good spot to be in. Now, we knew it wasn't going to be perfect, but certainly Luis, you know, continues that trend.
No doubt about it. More with Rakan coming up in a couple of minutes here. But first, Andy?
Yes, Sox games are better with a group. It's never too early to lock in your 2020 group package from a diamond suite to a pregame patio party. We've got the perfect space for your occasion. For more information, visit WhiteSox.com or call 312-674-1000.
Conversation with the GM continues, and then coming up, Michael Kopech. It's White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly.
We are extremely excited about this addition.
He strikes out the side, 13 straight, retired by Dallas Keuchel.
We view this as the next logical step in our process, one that was a high priority for us entering this offseason, and that being adding someone who not only helps stabilize the rotation, but someone who is going to be a key contributor inside the clubhouse as well.
Now, back to White Sox Weekly.
I like that. We'll have some conversation about Dallas Keuchel coming up after 6 o'clock tonight, Andy Mazur.
I'm ready for that. I've got some thoughts.
I'm really proud of what he did.
Me too.
Hey, man, not the cheating part, but the owning it part and the moving forward part and the honest part. All of that was refreshing.
You know, it was interesting. Ozzie Guillen was asked about that same thing during our panel. I'll share with you later on what he had to say about that as well.
I'm looking forward to that. Let's get back in with Rick Hahn, the White Sox general manager. And, of course, the White Sox signing Luis Robert in the offseason, 6 years and $50 million, essentially taking 1 year of free agency off the table and being able to start the season with Robert in center field, seemingly on opening day. How do you get yourself comfortable with making that level of deal, giving somebody $50 million, Rick Hahn, who has not played a game in the big leagues?
We've knock on wood, we've have a pretty decent track record here in terms of signing young guys long-term deals. And this goes back to, you know, Burley and Canerico, and then obviously, you know, Sale and Q and Eaton and TA. But those, you know, those were beneficial. Those deals were beneficial for us. They were obviously beneficial for the players. But in recent years, we knew that these were becoming a little more difficult. Players were a little more reticent to give up free agency control. Certainly the numbers and arbitration have gotten sizable, that there's a pretty nice payout for just getting to your first year of arbitration eligibility. So when we set off initially on this whole rebuild, there's a memo somewhere in my office, probably not in Jerry's anymore, but it was given to Jerry. In describing one of the elements of this was an economic strategy as part of the rebuild. And not only was it, you know, needing to maintain our flexibility and needing to have a reserves and cash reserve in place for when it was time to take a foray into free agency, but it was also that we were going to have to be more aggressive to do some of these long-term deals, and that the benefit of the added control was significant. That, you know, we maybe have to do some things that we're uncomfortable with, and I'm sure we outline we might even go to a player before he's appeared in a single big league game. I think that's probably more the exception, even though we've done it twice now in the span of 10 months or whatever. I think it's still more the exception and a testament to how unique the talents of Eloy and Luis are.
Yeah. Also interesting, does it give you kind of a baseline? Because, you know, Eloy came up with all these expectations, and you saw him go through some growing pains here and there, and still, yeah, I know you want to work with him defensively in the outfield as well. Does it kind of give you a baseline of maybe what to expect, you know, with Luis? I know they're different players, but at least a guy making bursting out of the big league scene in his first year.
It does. And I think, Andy, that, you know, I think that's an experience that is important for fans to have in their mind as they evaluate, you know, Luis Robert's progress. But I think really, like, the experiences of Giolito and Moncada should be the most obvious. I'm sure that this weekend no Sox fan is going to stand up and admit that after the 2018 season they decided that Giolito was a bust, or they decided Moncada was a bust, and if they're smart they've cleaned their Twitter feeds they've scrubbed their Twitter feeds of such hate that was probably been out there after the 18 season. But those two and the progress they made last year and the way that ultimately they were able to acclimate themselves to the big leagues and in the end their, you know, undoubtable talent shown through, those are important lessons. Look, I would love it for Luis Robert to hit the ground running on March 26 and not look back and win Rookie of the Year and you know, go 30-30 and do all these marvelous things that we think he's capable of doing over the course of his career. traditionally that doesn't happen with prospects. Look, we're a little spoiled in this town. Chris Bryant came up, and he was a dude from day one. That was pretty special. That doesn't tend, that's more the exception than the norm. And I certainly think that even though we think the world of Luis, and we think the world of Eloy, and we still are very, very bullish on certainly Eloy's future, and feel great about Luis's future, that you still got to remember the process, the path that guys like Giolito and Moncada took, and sometimes it takes a little longer than you'd like, but the talent does win out in the end.
I feel like that's one of the harder parts of sitting in your chair, too, when everyone's screaming, he sucks! I'm like, hey, man, like, I'm seeing something, and I have more information than you, and we're going to let him play it out. You guys also had the luxury of doing that in the last couple of years, which is, you know, that's obviously going to be ramped up now.
No, it's true. And look, it's only hard when it's my kids at the breakfast table, like, and have to deal with their issues on this, but the rest I tend to tune out pretty well. It is one thing that, you know, you say about having more information or sort of knowing, you know, what a guy may be dealing with physically or what he may be dealing with off the field or, you know, developmentally, what we're trying to change about him and the amount of time, the repetition that truly takes. You're right. Those of us inside are a little more privy to certain things that aren't going to get out publicly. The cost of it hasn't been, you know, for me individually, for Rick Hahn individually, it hasn't been like having to deal with the haters and like what to say to them. It's more like I've lost the ability to be a hater. Like when something goes wrong with the Bulls or the Bears or the Blackhawks, like, and I get all mad and get the red ass and be turned into a meatball fan momentarily, I'm always like, oh, well, wait, they have more information. You know, they know what's up, and I'm sure there's a logic to their decision. So, like, I've lost that. That's the cost to me.
Yeah, I'm curious, too, with a couple of things that are going to change this year through Major League Baseball with the 26th man on your roster now and also relief pitchers having to face three batters, how that's going to change things and what that does to you guys looking at that 26th guy out of spring training and how you're going to get your relievers ready to do that.
You know, first from the reliever standpoint, we develop these guys with the intent that they are not specialists. Like, you don't want a guy just to be a left-on-left guy. You might identify him in A-ball or double-A and be like, I think this is probably going to be the limit on this fella. But ideally, you equip them with the arsenal to get both-handed hitters out. So really, from a developmental standpoint, it doesn't change a lot. From identifying who you break with, maybe it plays a role. I do think, and I haven't been too closely monitoring this, but there are a handful of left-handed relievers out there who seem to have pretty strong splits, really good against lefties and a lot of trouble against righties, who still seem to be out in the market, where I think prior to the rule change might have found a home by now. But generally, you know, whether it's Bummer or Fry, you know, excuse me, we view those as guys who are effective against lefties and righties when they're right, and that's who we want to try to grow behind them. As for the 26th man, it'll be interesting. I think teams are going to sort of learn, feel their way through it initially. You know, it won't shock me if teams, you know, carry a third catcher at times. So it'll allow for pinch running and substitution at a position that managers traditionally are a little scared to go to their backup in game. You might see teams try to store a Rule 5 guy more easily, you know, stick with a Rule 5 guy longer because you can hide him a little bit more easily. You know, a base-stealing specialist, does that make sense for you to carry? You know, the 26-man, like, I think that's probably not going to have, like, a monumental impact. It's going to, you know, make life a little bit easier because, you know, if one night Lurie's banged up and, you know, he's down for like 3 days, you'll have coverage where if 25 guys and Lurie's your backup for three outfield positions and two infield positions and he's down, you sort of sweat through the game. But I don't think it's going to have as big an impact on as perhaps the change of the September rules, for example, where you have a limit of 28. I think that will probably be, you'll hear more about that come next offseason than the 26 man.
Wrapping up here, White Sox General Manager Rick Hahn. I should have said that before, but everybody knows who we're talking to right now. Andy Mazur and Mark Carmen on 720 WGN. I just wanted to, you know, I know that you're not making the marketing slogans, but the we play louder, faster, bolder, not here to play the game, here to change it. This, you know, your players obviously are buying in here, and to just know that you've assembled a group that wants to own that. I just think it's super cool.
I think it's great. It's from my standpoint, you like to see the players understand, or excuse me, the fans understand the player's personality and understand what makes the individual tick. At least for me, growing up as a sports fan, it felt a little bit more special when I sort of knew, you know, what Mike Singletary was about, or at least thought I knew what Mike Singletary was about, and have that connection. So I like that you're seeing more of our players' individual personalities, whether it's Tim Anderson or Kopech out speaking yesterday or this week to fans. I think that having that connection is important, and I think everything we can do to promote that connection is a positive.
I still watch the Super Bowl Shuffle at least once a week. That's just me. Rick, appreciate the time. Congrats on everything, and great to see you at Sox Fest.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
I know you could sing the Willie Gault portion right now.
Speedy Willie. He's world class.
He likes running, but he loves to catch the pass.
Correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He practices all day, dances all night. He's got to get ready for the Sunday fight. I'm as smooth as a chocolate swirl. Dance really funky, so watch me, girl. There's no one here that does it like me. My Super Bowl Shuffle will set me
free.
Thanks to Rick Hahn for joining us. You want to do Sweetness?
They call me Sweetness, and I like to dance. Running the ball is like making romance.
I'd love 34.
We've had the goal since training camp to give Chicago a Super Bowl chance.
Conversation with Rick Hahn, sponsored by Mazda of Orland Park and ZoomZoomNation.com, where they're always trying to make your car shopping fun.
We're not doing this because we're greedy. Bears are here to feed the needy.
Didn't come here looking for trouble.
Super Bowl Shuffle, baby.
So good. Hey, stay up to date, by the way, on all things White Sox and the Super Bowl Shuffle by signing up for the free White Sox Blacklist. You get breaking news, prospect updates, excuse me, special ticket offers, and more delivered right to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/blacklist to sign up today.
And 2020 ticket packages are on sale right now. Secure your seat with a 20-game plan. Find the plan that meets your schedule and your budget. Lower-level plans starting as low as $403. For more information, whitesox.com or 312-674-1000.
The manager, Ricky Renteria, with a bunch of comments earlier this week. How's he going to manage the depth? What about the expectations? We will hear from the skipper next. It's White Sox Weekly. Andy Mazur, yours truly, Mark Harmon on 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly.
Their pitching staff excites me a lot just because there's a lot of good young arms that could be great. So hopefully I can help them out to be the best that they can be, and hopefully at the end of the day, by the end of the 4 years, we made a deep run in the postseason, and, you know, God willing, we're going to win a championship.
Now, back to White Sox Weekly.
That was Yasmani Grandal, White Sox Weekly, till 6 o'clock. We're doing some extended White Sox talk tonight because it is Sox Fest. And, hey, we're having some fun here. Mark Harmon, Andy Mazur, good to be with you on 720 WGN. Ricky Renteria, we were both there for his press conference the other day. What did, before we play some of these cuts, what did you think of the way Ricky handled the expanded talent on the roster?
That's the Ricky I know and love from our days in San Diego. Because Ricky, when Ricky gets unplugged and really tells you exactly how things are going to go, you can kind of believe that's real. That's not anything he's bringing to this press conference. That is a guy that is excited to manage a ball club that has some talent on it and has some expectations attached to it.
He's a super positive guy.
Always has been.
Yeah.
Ever since I've met him.
If you don't like Ricky Renteria, there's like kind of something wrong with you.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not saying he's the best manager in the game or whatever, but as far as a likable guy and someone you want to root for, come on.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair, I mean, he was a coach when I met him in San Diego, but he was, you know, moved up to the bench coach before he took off for the Cubs job. But you think about the teams that he's had to manage, you know, with the Cubs in 14,
nothing,
and then here with the White Sox the last few years,
not much.
There's been some glimpses of it, and there's been glimmers of hope, but he's a guy that has been developing talent and relating with his talent, and I think that's a huge. A point that kind of goes under notice sometimes, because that's how he builds his credibility within his group.
And going back to the Cubs thing just for a second, you know, when he gets bunged out of there, not fair, can't put it on him, but whatever, the Cubs were super excited to bring in Joe Maddon, elite guy. Mm-hmm. That's not a knock on Ricky.
No, not at all.
One of the few guys that you would do that for, and they love Joe, and obviously it worked out great, won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't say a word about it. He handled that as professional a manner as he could, got an opportunity to be a bench coach with Robin, and then he got his opportunity. So it's like a lesson in how to handle
when life is not going your way, per se, at the moment.
And, you know, he probably would be upset with me for revealing this, but, you know, there were a couple of reporters locally here that knew that I knew him and asked me to reach out to him to see if he would talk. And I, you know, I got in touch with him. I talked to him pretty quickly after the whole thing went down. And he said, what good is that going to do me? He says, you know me. I said, hey, listen, I know you. I'm calling you because they've asked me to call you, so I'm doing them the favor. I said, I told them that you're not going to want to say anything because that's not how you operate. You're just looking for your next opportunity, and you're waiting it out, and you'll see. And he knew he was going to get back.
Right. Right. And, hey, look, I got relationships in the game. It's not in my favor to say something bad about Theo and Jed, who were also in his corner.
They were
at the same time, as despite moving on from him. All right, let's bring in some Ricky from the other day. How about these expectations, Rick Renteria? Are you nervous, perhaps, that the club is not ready to take that on at the start of the season or even this year in general?
I'm not afraid of numbers, and I'm not afraid of talking about high expectations and winning. I know most people, you know, they talk about it because you think you're putting your own head in the noose. Huh? Listen, we're going to be what we're going to be. If we do our job and we go about preparing and hopefully, you know, the actions, the performances come to fruition, we should be on top of the victory column in terms of wins and losses. And there's nothing beyond my thought that doesn't say that I expect us to try to be competing and be a conversation for postseason play.
So along those lines, Ricky, that postseason thing that you just named, should we expect the White Sox to be in the postseason? Would you be disappointed if it didn't happen?
I would be disappointed if we don't make the postseason. I think that would be accurate. We want to break through. We want this to be an impactful season, and I think you can't force those things. You got to allow them to obviously play themselves out. But I think man for man, now we at least have a little bit more ammunition to be able to go out and compete, hopefully on a consistent basis that puts those victories on the board. And, you know, it's a long season. My job is to make sure they stay even keeled in the ups and the downs. But I'm very happy with where we're at right now with the personnel.
See, I loved it, and I was kind of nervous for him at the same time. Like, hey, you don't know if Dylan Cease is going to be good. You don't know if Lopey can be. You
very
know.
True.
But he's not walking away from it at all. Look, we've spent a bunch of dough. These guys are young and talented and should be better. And, yes, I'd be disappointed if we don't make the postseason.
Yeah, he's looking forward to the makeup of this team as well, which I think we're going to get into here in a second. But, you know, the opportunity to manage a team that can self-police and do some things that he doesn't have to worry about, because he's had to worry about that with a real young team.
That's interesting that you bring up the makeup. And let's hear play cut five here, Curtis, on playing time and sort of, you know, and I asked him this question.
This was great. I mean, I thought about this as you were asking. I'm like, I'm really interested to hear what he's going to say about this.
Yeah, because, you know, you've got Grandel. Well, James McCann had a great year, and I didn't even say McCann, but he went to it. Like, what about this? How are you going to balance all this talent?
I've had some conversations. I've been asked questions about how are you going to split time with McCann and Grandel. I think that the game itself will dictate a lot in terms of what we do. Obviously, Mac played a huge role for us last year. I've had several conversations with Mac over the winter. And baseball has a way of working itself out in terms of playing time. Everybody thinks that you start off with the lineup, and all of a sudden, third or fourth day into the season, it's like, okay, what happened? It's a different lineup altogether. Well, yeah, that happens. But you have to be prepared to do that. The one thing that I do not want, and I'm okay with having a conversation with every player that I have on my roster, is I cannot allow players to become selfish.
So there you have it. Hey, we're trying to win the World Series.
Yeah.
There's 162 games. You might not get 600 at-bats, but you're going to get 400. And I'm going to do my best to put you in matchups that are going to be in your benefit and in the team's benefit.
And with the extra man on the roster this year, there are going to be guys that are not going to be in the starting lineup that may have not gotten into an opportunity to participate in a game, whether it be on the base paths, whether it be as a pinch hitter, whether it be as a defensive replacement. They're going to have a chance to make an impact one way or the other.
Yeah, and that's normally you're more comfortable with that being a veteran guy because they're used to not being in the lineup every day. It's a tough thing to do to sit for a week, and then all of a sudden you're in a huge spot.
Yep, crank it up.
Yep. Have the mindset to be successful and go out there and do it. But I'm really like, for me, like if I'm James McCann, I'm like, wait a second. I just had a great year. I went to the All-Star game. I helped you with Lucas Giolito. Now you're going out and you're getting a catcher, and I'd be a little irritated.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like he's going about it that way. And I like that Ricky's being proactive with it too.
Proactive, and look, I mean, Grandal has the ability to play first base. Grandal also has the ability to be a DH. So there's going to be plenty of opportunity once that rotation gets set. And you know, plus it's going to depend on matchups. It's going to depend on who you're playing, what pitcher you're facing that day. So I don't think there's really anything for James McCann or Jose Abreu or Zach Collins, he's the guy on the roster that's the number 26, you're going to get your chance. You're going to get your opportunity. Then you got to make the most of it.
Yep, and you see it all around baseball. The teams with depth, they tend to last through the 162 a little bit better. Hey, Pick 10 plans are on sale now. Get ready for that 2020 season with this flexible and affordable ticket plan. Pick your games, your opponents, your schedule with lower-level plans starting at $205. Visit WhiteSox.com to pick your plan today.
And you can upgrade your game day in 2020 with premium seating. Enjoy an all-exclusive and inclusive experience with packages starting at just 20 games. You can cheer on your Sox from the best seats in the house. For more information, WhiteSox.com or 312-674-1000.
We're going to hit the cheating scandal and those Houston Astros and vacating that World Series, damn it, coming up after 6 o'clock, 720 WGN.